32 minutes after 11 o'clock, our Mellow Joy Coffee Time. My pleasure to welcome back in the studio Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center. Sir, how you doing today?
I'm doing good inside.
What you mean by inside?
Well, meaning in the air conditioning. It's hot.
How are plants surviving this heat?
Well, they're surviving, and anything that was duly planted, you need to kind of take care of. The good thing is that if you put them in nice raised beds, this summer has actually been very good. Very good for the plants that were newly planted, as well as the lawns. The lawns are really flourished, obviously. I mean, the grass is growing. So is everything else. But remember, the thicker the grass, the less weeds you're going to get. But it has promoted some other weeds that are causing some problems. Generally, when it comes to the lawns, we've had some crabgrass issues. And, you know, this year would have been a great year if you sprayed a pre-emergent early on. It would have limited that because the freeze killed the crabgrass. Crabgrass is really an annual. It freezes out, but then it comes up from seed. And so if you can take care of the seed, especially in a wind like this, which they were knocked out. But if you didn't, boy, they came back with a vengeance because of the moisture. Any seed that was in the ground that was available to grow this year grew simply because of the amount of moisture we had. And it grew rapidly and big. So still got a lot of crabgrass issues, a lot of buttonweed issues. But the lawns are definitely flourishing. So if you didn't have a lot of weeds, this summer has helped in terms of the thickness of the lawn and just the overall growth.
Very good. Very good. So you brought in a whole bunch of
things. Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about the different sprayers and kind of the do's and don'ts and what type of sprayer you can use. So we'll get into that right now.
Okay.
So basically, there are a lot of different types of sprayers on the market today, much different than it was years ago. Years ago, basically, you had the old tank sprayer that you pump up and you spray, and as it loses its strength, you pump up some more. And then similar to that, you have the backpack sprayers, which you strap on your back, and you just, as you're walking, you continue to pump it and you keep spraying. That basically holds more water. So if you have a large area to do, that's a great little sprayer. Those will generally hold about 4 gallons, whereas the little tank sprayers will hold anywhere from 1 to 2 gallons, because if it gets too heavy, it's just hard to hold. Those are the most common type sprayers, and the benefit for the little tank sprayer is that you can mix up to about a gallon or two, pump it up as you go, so you can do a fair amount of spraying, whereas the backpack sprayer, which is technically a pump sprayer also, will hold more, but instead of holding it in your hand, you're strapping your back. Both of those are the most common ones that you see, but I want to talk a little bit about a couple of other ones, and the bigger one that's kind of coming onto the market is the one that you connect to the water hose. Now, years ago, the only way you could do that is if you bought a separate sprayer. And Jeff, I'm showing you here, this one here is just a hose end sprayer with no chemical that you actually attach to the water hose and you spray it, and it mixes as it sprays. The benefit to this one is that you can spray a lot more chemical without having to continually mix. It also will spray further in terms of the distance, meaning that if you have a tree that's maybe 6 or 8 feet tall, you don't have to get on a ladder to spray it. And the third advantage, it puts out a lot more chemical, so it doesn't take you as long. If you were trying to do a tank spray on a ladder and trying to spray a tree, it would take you a lot more. You'd have to mix the chemical several times to get the same amount of sprays that you would get. A hose end sprayer like this, which when you put it in the container will hold a pint, will spray, depending on the mixture, anywhere from 32 gallons to 64 gallons, depending on how it's mixed. So it really lessens the number of times you're mixing as opposed to the tank sprayer that you're pumping. The disadvantage to them is that you're somewhat limited by the water hose. Obviously, if you hook it up to the water hose and you stretch it out, that's maybe add another 8-10 feet for the spray. You're kind of limited on the distance traveled, whereas with a tank sprayer or a backpack sprayer, you can go further into the yard than maybe the hose will take you. One thing you want to watch with the hose end sprayers is that You need, you need 64, 68 pounds of pressure coming out of the water faucet. And, city water has that kind of pressure. Sometimes when you get into the rural areas, you may be somewhat limited on using the hose and sprayer simply because you may not have the pressure. So you need to know your pressure. The other things is that, 100 feet is about the max you could do if you're having a 100-foot water hose, if you have a normal water pressure like city water. So you couldn't start connecting 200, 300, 400 feet of water hose because you're going to lose your pressure. And when you lose your pressure, the chemical that's pulled out of the hose and sprayer either won't come up out at all or it won't come out accurately. And so you may not get a good spraying with it. So hose and sprayers are great if you can get into the area that you want. The other good thing about the hose and sprayers is that, or at least this one right here that I'm showing, is that you put the chemical in pure and there's no pre-mixing, and it mixes as it is pulled out of the sprayer. The reason that's a big advantage is that let's say you pour a pint into this sprayer and you go out and spray and you have 8 ounces left. Those 8 ounces are not mixed, so you can actually pour that back in the bottle. Whereas if you're using a tank sprayer, you mix it. And with most chemicals, especially when it comes to insecticides and fungicides, once they're mixed, you got to spray them. As a matter of fact, once they're mixed, really, if you keep them in there 3, 4, 5 hours, the water actually breaks that chemical down. And so you want to spray it within an hour. You want these chemical sprays once they're mixed. With the hose and sprayer, at least or the one I'm showing, it does not mix in the container. So you don't waste any chemical. You don't have to worry about how much to mix. It is going to be pure chemical once you're done, and you just pour it back in the bottle, and you're going to be set. What they're doing now over the last, 10 years, is more and more companies are actually making their own bottles and putting their own chemical in the hose end bottle. That's really neat and really simple for the homeowner, because all you do is you don't even have to pour the chemical into a hose end sprayer type sprayer. You're just going to take the chemical that is pre-done by the manufacturer in the hose end sprayer, hook it up to the hose, open it up, and start spraying. It's a great idea. It doesn't mix in the bottle, so it's the same story holds true, is that whatever you have left remains in the bottle. You just unhook it and you put it back on your shelf. When it comes to spraying these type sprayers, you can put down a lot more chemicals, so it's going to take you a lot less time. You don't have to hold, you don't have to soak it. You just spray the leaves and move on, and you're done. One thing I do caution when it comes to hose end sprayers, and this, what I'm fixing to talk about, is more related to weed killers. When you're spraying weed killers with a hose end sprayer, you're putting a lot more herbicide out, and so you got to be really, really careful when you're using it in a situation such as lawns, when temperatures get this hot. And the reason is that the homeowner, as a general rule, will say, I'm going to spray it, and you're getting a lot more chemical out, but you end up kind of soaking it a little bit too much. It's easy to do. You got a lot of water, a lot of chemical coming out, and the combination of putting out a lot of chemical in the heat that we're having can kill your grass, or at minimum will burn your grass. So what we do is we pretty much, when it comes to the hose end herbicides, we will actually turn them around on the shelf at the store in the summertime and try not to sell it, saying that, okay, so if you have a weed problem in your yard this time of year, it's better to go ahead and use a tank sprayer where you can actually spot spray it rather than use a spray that's putting out a lot of water and it's getting over everything. And that's the safest way to do it. Even if the chemical is labeled to be sprayed on St. Augustine, the temperatures sometimes will create a problem. When we sell the hose end sprayers for lawn herbicides, We sell that in the spring. Generally, January, which I know I realize is winter, but January through about middle of May, and then we stop it. Then you'll start again in Octoberish, when temperatures subside, really through the winter. And it kind of depends on what you're spraying. The pre-emergence you can spray in the wintertime and in January. But that's when you'd want to use the hose end sprayer on the lawn. Now, can you use a hose end sprayer to spray your crepe myrtle in the summertime? Absolutely. We may say, hey, use it later in the afternoon or early in the morning. But in terms of use of that to spray for insects or fungus, not a problem. The timing of the day might be a problem. We may recommend, depend on the chemical, doing that late, early in the morning or late afternoon. But when it comes to the herbicide, we don't care what time of day. You can use it in the morning, you can use it in the late afternoon, or you can use it in the middle of the day. It is going to be a problem when using a hose and sprayer on weeds in the summertime.
Okay.
Then we also have, and is just the old hand Windex type sprayer that you can actually go around and spot spray with.
I was going to say, you want to do a lot of mass stuff with that, would you?
No, absolutely. So what Jeff is looking at here is kind of a little quart, little hand sprayer. The easiest way for the people to recognize it is imagine a little Windex type sprayer. The advantage to this one is that obviously there's no pre-mixing. If you, let's say, for example, you have a Scheffelaer houseplant, whether it be inside or outside, that obviously you wouldn't want to hook to the hose and spray it. But this is one to do small areas. And if you have one or two plants that you want to spray or one rose that you want to spray, these little handheld sprayers are great for doing that. You don't have to mix it. You don't have to dig your tank sprayer out and mix it. The chemical will keep in the container, so it's pre-mixed. It's the solvents they're mixing it with won't break down the chemical. So easy to do. Another advantage to this one is if you're trying to spot spray certain plants, whether it be in the lawn or in the flower bed. A lot of times you don't have a good answer to a weed that may be in the flower bed that you say, yeah, there's no chemical that'll kill this, so you got to be careful. Well, there's some chemicals that'll kill it, but it'll kill the shrubs too. So that's when certain chemicals, and this one's called kills, that you could actually spot spray on these weeds. And like certain weed killers, for example, 2,4-D, if you spot spray 2,4-D in a flower bed, it gets into the soil. It can cause problems in the soil. Certain herbicides you can spot spray, and if it rains, it will break down in the soil. So it's not going to be a problem at all. But you got to spot spray it because you just can't willy-nilly overspray it, because it will affect. If it gets on the leaves of the good plants, it will affect it. So that's the advantage. You could say, well, why not just use a little tank sprayer and go and spot spray it? Yeah, that's fine. You got to be really careful. The problem with the tank sprayer is that it's under a lot of pressure. So you might squirt it, and you might get a little splash. Well, if there's a leaf nearby, that splash may get on that leaf and cause problems. So the safest way to spot spray a lawn with a non-selective herbicide or basically a non-selective herbicide, which means it'll kill anything you spray it on, is always with this handheld, and they call them ready-to-use, RTUs, ready-to-use sprayers, Windex-type sprayers, and you can go around and kind of spot spray. Now, obviously, with a sprayer like this, if you have a weed in monkey grass or on a ground cover, it's not practical because no matter how you spray it, it's going to get on that on the ground cover. But it's very practical to spray within a flower bed where you have space between the plants and you can actually go attack that plant. It works very, very well, and it's very, very safe depending on the chemical you're using. So kind of keep that in mind, and we sell a lot of those this time of year for that reason. And we also sell a lot of these for spraying insecticides and fungicides on a small plant, or maybe one or two, three small plants that you just want to go hand spray it, and you may have to do it once or twice within a 2 or 3 week period. They work really, really good. Now, the next one I got here is kind of different one, a different type, and this is a duster. We sell very few dusters. 30 years ago, Jeff, dusting was was much more than
I think of an old tin can and
exactly. And you know, and the you know, as people start to understand how chemicals work, and become a little bit more you know, environmentally conscious, you know, the dusters are less and less used and recommended. Years ago, the reason why people wanted to use the dust is because you could dust it and you could see. Mm-hmm. You could say, okay, I got the dust on there. I see it's there. And they spray the liquid chemical and they couldn't see it. So they, in their mind, they were saying it wasn't there. When in reality, you know, it is there. And with the liquids, you can get a much, much better coverage, meaning that you can get below the leaf and on top of the leaf, covering the entire leaf. Where with the dust, it's very hard to do that because it's just hard to control. The other issue.
So you're wasting a lot of product.
Exactly. And the other issue is that it's flying everywhere. So it's when you dust, probably 50% is getting on the plant, and the other 50% is floating away, causing an environmental issue and also wasting a lot of product and costing a lot more. And so we still sell dust because people believe in them. And this is just a way, a container that you just fill the base of it and you pump it, and it just shoots the dust onto the plant.
Does that hose help maybe make it more directional the way?
Yeah,
that looks unique to me.
What Jeff is looking at is just a little, I guess I don't know how you describe it, Jeff. Maybe a 6-inch long plastic tube. I guess, and that it's connected to the little sprayer, and that's exactly it. It directs it more, so it goes on, you know, the exact spot that you spray it, and then it kind of disperses, as opposed to what they used to do, Jeff. They would take actually stockings and fill the stocking up and go hit the stocking within the bush, and the stuff would fly. You know, things change, and we kind of know how to do it, but this is kind of to help you maybe direct the dust in a little bit better situation so that it maybe won't waste as much. But just remember, when it comes to we sell most of the dust or so for vegetable plants, Jeff, and it is much more economical to buy a concentrate, mix it with water and spray it, or use a hose end sprayer and spray it, than it would to buy a 4-pound bag of dust and try to get a large amount of plants. And so from an environmentally friendly, from a waste standpoint, and from an economic standpoint, you know, the concentrates make a lot more sense, you know, than the dust do. So, it's slowly going toward, certainly, Jeff, what we sell today in terms of environmentally friendly, the options on organic versus...
I was going to say, you know, as far as... consuming items versus a plant that you're not eating versus vegetables or fruit and those
absolutely
kinds of
you got to be very careful on what you're using and you know, read the label and make sure. But you know, the chemicals that are available today as opposed to 30 years ago are the safer chemicals. We have a much bigger selection of safer chemicals. We have a much bigger way of managing those chemicals, which is kind of what we're talking about here today, in terms of how to use them, and the packaging is better in terms of being able to spray it, and since the consumer is much more environmentally friendly and much more savvy when it comes to what they want to use it, you know, supply and demand, and so the market kind of dictates what direction these chemical companies go. And that has occurred. You know, there's a lot safer chemicals today that you can use on anything, whether it be edibles or not. Certainly on herbs, there are a lot safer chemicals, organics that work extremely well, that do the job, and safer ways to apply those chemicals. You know, a lot of the older chemicals are non-existent, Jeff. They've either been taken off the market completely, or they have been put so that the homeowner can't get to them. And I'll tell you, the way they're doing that is that they're saying, okay, you know, the farmer needs this chemical, but we don't want the homeowner to be able to use it because they're misusing it. You know, they'll put it in a 2.5 gallon container and you know, have a retail of $130, $230, whatever amount of dollars, where obviously a guy who has 10 tomato plants ain't buying a 2.5 gallon amount of this chemical. And so that's one way that they have been able to do it. Obviously, there's some chemicals that are restricted. They can only be, sold to a licensed farmer.
Yeah, our LSU Ag Center guys talk about those classes all the time.
Exactly. So there's certainly that class. But I think, and very well done, what they've done is the chemicals that they say, you know, we don't need to restrict this chemical, but we're worried that it may be misused. And so we don't want that to happen. They just force the chemical people to put them in larger containers so that the people who are going to be using it are going to use it correctly. And it kind of makes sense. You know, if you're a lawn service or if you're a farmer, you're going to mix that chemical correctly for many, many reasons. But a big reason is cost. I mean, you know, you got to watch what you're spending. And so you're not just going to say, hey, you know, if a tablespoon is good, I'm going to put 2 tablespoons, which I'm a, you know, homeowner many times will do that. But if you are a farmer, you're not going to do that because you're spraying acres and acres, and it just costs too much to not use it correctly. And so I think it's a good thing. And, you know, we had a transition period maybe 15 years ago where there wasn't a lot available. You know, you'd have to almost go to the harsher chemicals, whereas today there are a few isolated areas that maybe a chemical that's non-organic. But the good news is that the chemicals that are now available to the homeowner, even if they're not organic, are much safer, much, much safer today than they were 15, 20, 30 years ago.
Gotcha there.
Yes. And, Jeff, other than that, you know, we're just kind of wading our way. We got some more heat tomatoes that you plant. Remember, you got to about the middle of August, the latest end of August, to spray those, to plant those fall tomatoes, which you plant in the summer for fall production. And we're just kind of in between seasons right now. You know, a lot of weed issues, as we talked before, a lot of fungus issues. Watch your, watch your roses and some of the more other, disease prevalent plants. You want to stay on top of that because it's been so wet that it's been an issue.
The fact that it's been so wet, but lately not so wet, although isolated stuff, more isolated than broad areas of rain, but the heat, does that balance the earlier rain, or would you like just a little bit more consistency?
Well, I mean, a little bit more consistency would be wonderful. And that's strictly because, you know, it's kind of feast of famine many a times, and we haven't gotten there yet, but, you know, we may get to a point where it gets so dry. But the good news is that, you know, this year the people planted in the spring. See, these rains, it's nothing like a saturated rain that really goes deep into the soil, because these newly planted plants, and that's including vegetables, but I'm talking trees and shrubs, that water is going really, really deep. So those roots are extending and going way down, and that helps a lot. Even though we get a lot of rain, just those intermittent dry spots, those trees need to reach for that water, and they go and get it. And so that helps tremendously. It's just been a good, you know, we've had the only loss we've had in terms of plant material has been root rot. And that's if you plant in an area that didn't drain properly or had a drainage issue. We've had that. And where the plant just dies, and they say, how could it die? It looks like it dried out. And it's the opposite. It's just that it stayed too wet and they get root rot. And then what happens is, because the roots have rotted, means that they cannot pick up moisture, so they dry out. And so it looks like they're drying out, and you say, how could this possibly dry out? We've had too much rain, and that's it. It's just, so it's really important to prepare your site, and we talk about that all the time, Jeff, is, you know, do your prep work first, you know, and make those beds raised, solve water drainage issues, whether it be gutter issues or anything like that, before you plant, so that you don't have a disappointment.
Gotcha. Anything else?
I think that's it, Jeff. I think that's it. And stay cool, my friends.
All right. Always a pleasure, man.
Thank you, Jeff.